Thank you very much, Lauren. And I wanted to really thank you for that great guided meditation, because it was just what we needed. It was perfect introduction to this topic, because now everybody has a sense of what Vedana is, and we can move kind of smoothly into looking at how this feeling tone affects relationship. So that's our subject for today, Vedana and relationships. And the inspiration for this talk came from a talk by Martine Batchelor. And Susan Alotrico found this for us when we, the teachers of this series, were planning what we were going to talk about this month. And so she brought this talk, we listened to it, and I don't think before we heard this talk, we necessarily would have thought about talking about relationships from this lens of the Vedanas. But after we heard Martine's talk, it seemed so helpful that we wanted to share this way of looking at things with all of you. So that's why I'm talking about that this morning. And I couldn't find a story, but I did find a couple of poems. So I'm going to start with a poem by Rumi, which isn't exactly about this topic, but I think it kind of fits the mood. It's called A Community of Spirit. There is a community of spirit. Join it and feel the delight of walking in the noisy street and being the noise. Drink all your passion and be a disgrace. Close both eyes to see with the other eye. Open your hands if you want to be held. Sit down in this circle. Quit acting like a wolf and feel the shepherd's love filling you. At night, your beloved wanders. Don't accept consolations. Close your mouth against food. Taste the lover's mouth in yours. You moan, "She left me. He left me." 20 more will come. Be empty of worrying. Think of who created thought. Why do you stay in prison when the door is so wide open? Move outside the tangle of fear thinking. Live in silence. Flow down and down in always widening rings of being. So as I said, this isn't exactly about Vedana, but it does have the sense of encouraging us to step out of our narrow ways of thinking and our habitual perceptions when it comes to our relationships. And I think that's what this discussion of Vedana and relationship will also encourage us to do. So thanks to Lauren's wonderful guided meditation, we all know what Vedanas are, this Pali word, which in English is translated into feeling tone. So this sense of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral quality that goes along with every experience, object, person we come in contact with. Something that just sort of rises automatically. Not something you figure out or think about or decide on after you've had time to check out whatever this thing is. It's just a kind of instinctive reaction. And whether you perceive something as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral depends on a lot of things. Some of the reactions are almost instinctive for pretty much all of us as humans. You know, certain experiences like physical pain, we pretty much all would classify as being unpleasant, but others are much more individual, like the tastes of certain foods or preferences in clothing. And all of these Vedanas really depend on our history with the object, our memories of it, our social conditioning, family conditioning, maybe even the mood we were in when we first encountered it. All of these things come to influence how we perceive that object. And as Lauren mentioned, attention to this feeling tone of an object can change. For example, the way you experience eating ice cream. If you like ice cream, I'm assuming you do, at first it might be very, very pleasant. But then if you keep eating and eating and eating and eating, maybe you get too full, maybe you get sick to your stomach, well, not so pleasant at all. So this pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral isn't an intrinsic permanent quality of the object. It's something that comes from us and our own experience in history with the object, and it's something that also can change. And also, it's worth it to think that when we have this contact with the object, there's a pleasant or unpleasant or neutral feeling tone, but all sorts of these mental formations arise along with it too. Memories, ideas, former experiences, prejudice. So all of this stuff comes up and colors your experience of the object. And also, as Lauren noted too, a very important quality of the Vedana is that when we experience something that's pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, we have an instinctive or habitual way that we react to it. If something's pleasant, we tend to be attracted to it. We want to get closer to it. We want to get more of it. We want to hang on to it. If it's unpleasant, then we want to get rid of it. We want to push it away. We want to get away from it. And if something is neutral, we may not even notice it or pay much attention to it. And finally, as I mentioned before, these qualities of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral are impermanent and subject to change. Like everything in our life is subject to change, but we tend to have the expectation that they actually will not change. When we experience something as pleasant, we tend to feel like it should continue being pleasant and that every time we encounter it, it ought to give us this same pleasure. And if we experience something as unpleasant, we tend to assume that it's going to stay that way. And the next time we come in contact with it, it'll be unpleasant again. And we tend to hold these assumptions even in the face of evidence to the contrary. I remember one time a story about this when I was down at Cloud Mountain on retreat, and we had lunch, and one of the things that was there on the lunch table was kale. And I'm not the biggest fan of kale, so the first thing that came into my mind was, eh, kale. I hate kale. But I thought, okay, I'm on retreat. I'll try to be open. I took some kale. I went back to my seat. I mindfully ate the kale. I noticed the feeling tone of the kale. And, you know, it wasn't really unpleasant. It wasn't pleasant, but it was more like kind of neutral. So I'm like, you know, I don't really hate kale. It's just kind of meh. But then I went to take my plate back to, you know, put my plates in the busing area. Saw this kale. First thing that pops into my mind, ugh, kale. I hate kale. So it's sort of, in spite of just having this experience of finding that kale really isn't such an unpleasant thing, my initial mental reaction is this habit of, eh, hate kale. And it's kind of the same way with a lot of our mental formations and perceptions and prejudices. They kind of hang around and pop up even when we know they aren't necessarily really true. So these things we keep in mind about Vedana, unpleasant, unpleasant, or neutral quality associated with everything we come in contact, influenced by all sorts of mental formations that arise from our previous conditioning in relation to the object. It changes, though we tend to assume that it doesn't and it won't. We react to it in very habitual ways, pursuing the pleasant, trying to get rid of the unpleasant, and ignoring the neutral. So all of this applies when we come in contact with other people too. When we come in contact with other people, these Vedanas arise, just the same as they arise in response to a sound or a body sensation, this initial reaction of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. All of those mental formations, memories, prejudices, conditioning, all of this stuff, and also these habitual reactions of moving toward the pleasant, away from the unpleasant, and ignoring the neutral. And we can notice this process, you know, when we see someone or meet them for the first time, or say if we're just sitting at the bus stop waiting for the bus, which we're starting to do again, you know, now that things are opening up, and see all these different people passing by. As you notice each person, there's a feeling of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. These mental formations and associations come up. I mean, memories maybe of someone you knew that reminds you of this person. Ideas about what's attractive or beautiful and whether this person conforms to them. Ideas you have about the way they're dressed or their hairstyle or their skin color or how they talk. All these things come up and influence your perception of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And they color your ideas about this person. You know, is this someone I could be friends with? Is this someone I'm not going to like? It influences whether you even see this person clearly enough to form an opinion, or maybe don't even notice them. You know, if this person is very neutral, there just might be a quick glance and that's it. You don't even hardly see them. I think people talk about how they age, they become invisible, you know. So like if you're young, maybe middle-aged and older people are kind of not on your radar screen. Or say if you're at a party and there are people that are serving food or that kind of stuff, your focus is so on the people you're meeting at this function, and the people that are the servers are sort of in the background and you don't notice this kind of thing. And I think you can see here too, with these contact with people, how this is a place where prejudices of all kinds and biases of all kinds can spring up, ones we may not even realize we have, and can color this instinctive pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feeling. And these biases, you know, they don't have necessarily anything at all to do with reality, anything this person has done to us, anything we know about this person, but they still can influence our reactions and assumptions about other people. Now, in her talk, Martine Batchelor gave a funny example that illustrates this with some humor. And now she's French, but she now lives in England, and she mentioned how people from other countries, they often hear about how French people eat weird and slimy things, like snails and frogs and stinky cheese and stuff like that, which, you know, people think, oh, that's weird. But then how from that, they may form this perception that because French people eat these kind of weird and slimy things, French people themselves are sort of weird and strange and slimy. So, you know, you take this sort of like, I don't like the food you eat, so I don't like you, you know. And when you're thinking about snails and slimy cheese, it's kind of funny, but I think we all know how unfortunately common and harmful this is, and how easy it can be to feel that because someone has a custom or a habit that's strange to you, or speaks a language different from yours, or looks or dresses differently from you, you assume that maybe they are strange and unlike you, and so this sense of unpleasant. And, you know, sometimes these biases and prejudices are right up front, firmly held beliefs, but often they may be so subtle that we don't even realize they're there, and just create a little bit of uncomfortable feeling in our interaction with people, or maybe just a slight reserve, things that can kind of be felt, but we don't even quite know where they're coming from. So really something to pay attention to. Now, another place where Vedana comes in and plays a role quite strongly is in our romantic and sexual relationships, because, you know, so much of this is based on like physical attraction and a sense of coming in contact with this person and having a pleasant feeling. And, you know, this happens before you know anything about the person, their background, their personality, what they're interested in, their likes, dislikes, how they act. You don't know any of that, but somehow, ooh, ha-ha, there's a spark there. And so we're like, ooh, I want to be involved with this person. And of course, there should be a spark in romantic relationships. We want that. But it's also true that this person might be totally incompatible with us in every way except for this pleasant attraction. And then, you know, when we pursue them anyway, we often find ourselves in for a lot of trouble and misery. And our romantic relationships can be especially difficult too, because when we get this intense pleasure from contact with this other person, we really expect that that pleasure is just going to be there and it's not going to change. But I think inevitably, as most of us know, something always happens. You know, the person has habits that annoy you, or you have habits that annoy them, or they get preoccupied and don't give you the attention they feel you feel like you should be getting. Some way things aren't quite as pleasurable as they were at the beginning, and you think, oh, they don't love me anymore. Or you think, oh, what did I see in them? Blah. And you know, like that old B.B. King song says, the thrill is gone. And then there can be the big fight, the dramatic breakup, all that stuff. But these kinds of tendencies can also come up in a much milder way in our, you know, much more stable relationships, romantic relationships, as well as our relationships with friends, children, parents, where we have a certain feeling of pleasure and warmth and comfort with this person, and we assume it's always going to be like that. And then when it isn't like that in some interaction, we feel angry, disappointed, because these expectations we have were not, that we didn't even acknowledge often, are not fulfilled. And sometimes, you know, maybe there is something wrong. Maybe you did do something, but sometimes it may not have anything to do with you. It may be because this other person doesn't feel well. They're worried about some problem at work or distracted in some way, and so they don't respond to you with their usual interest and warmth. And it has nothing to do with their feelings about you. It's just because this other thing is disturbing them. But you don't know that. You assume that because things are not as pleasant as they were, something is wrong. So you can sort of see how these assumptions of feeling tone continuing can create a problem. Now, in the Buddhist teachings, Vedana is one of the four foundations of mindfulness, so it's one of the things we're supposed to pay attention to. And I think particularly it's important to pay attention to the Vedanas because of the way these habitual reactions follow our experience of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Moving toward the pleasant, grasping it, away from the unpleasant, ignoring or not seeing the neutral. These habitual reactions really move us into getting caught up into craving, into aversion, into delusion. So we need to pay attention, and maybe even especially because of the hurt and harm we can cause, we need to pay attention when it comes to our relationships with other people. So if there's any time that we might need to kind of take a pause and see what's going on when these feelings come up and not just rush to react with glomming on or pushing away, it's with our relationships with other people. So I think it can be really helpful and instructive to just notice as we encounter different people, the sense of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral arising, and to just kind of notice the sort of thoughts and memories and things that arise in our minds, and to reflect, you know, does this response, does this memory or thought or impression have anything to do with what's actually going on now? Does it have anything to do with anything I actually know about this person? What are the assumptions and projections I'm bringing? Are these all just about my conditioning? Does it have anything to do with anything? You know, just recognizing how much maybe we really don't know about this other person, about what they might be thinking or feeling, that we can't assume that our initial impressions are correct. And when we are working, it can also be helpful in established relationships. You know, as I was talking about before, being aware of our assumptions, looking for certain pleasant feelings and assuming that something is wrong when those same pleasant feelings aren't there. And, you know, maybe taking a little time to say, maybe it isn't what I think. Also noticing if we have relationships where we don't get along with this person so well, how we can assume that our interactions won't be bad, that they're not going to treat us well. Maybe we can take offense when they didn't really mean anything at all and assume that they're trying to hurt us or insult us when that was not even what was in their mind. And, you know, working with the Vedanas when it comes to other people applies to the way we work with them with other things as well. As Lauren was mentioning, they arise kind of spontaneously. So there's not a whole lot we can do about that. But we don't have to be imprisoned by them. We can question these initial reactions. We can question the assumptions that arise with them. We can resist the impulse to just follow and rush after and grab onto the people that we find attractive, or to get rid of or ignore the ones we think are unpleasant. Maybe we can pay a little more attention to the ones we habitually ignore. And thinking about this, I realize that in a way, working with Vedanas in relationships is a lot like working with metta, cultivating metta, you know, cultivating kindness for all different sorts of beings, not just the dear friends and the pleasant contacts, but the neutral person who we typically would ignore, or the difficult person who we might react to with aversion. So can we avoid getting caught in those near and far enemies in metta? Certainly we don't want to get caught in the aversion we feel when we have a sense of someone being different or difficult or not like us or unpleasant. But also we may want to avoid getting caught into the near enemy of attachment. You know, that feeling of looking to that person who is close to us or attractive to us for the pleasure that the contact brings us, instead of seeing them in a more open and less grasping way. So it's really an invitation to openness and kindness towards all beings, and an invitation to free ourselves our conditioned and instinctive biases, prejudices, and habits and reactions. As Rumi says, why do you stay in prison when the door is so wide open? Why do you stay imprisoned in your habits and your prejudices when we don't need to? Only because we don't take time to notice either the prison or the open door. So I'm hoping that all of you will feel like we teachers did, that looking at relationships through this somewhat unexpected lens of Vedana is surprisingly helpful and might really be something that you will learn a lot from when you pay attention to it as part of this month's exploration of this topic. So now I'd like to conclude with a poem by Muhyiddin Ibn al-Arabi. I'm not sure if that's pronounced right, but I think it kind of also speaks to this topic of maybe opening ourselves so we're not so caught into our habitual responses. There was a time when I would reject those who were not of my faith, but now my heart has grown capable of taking on all forms. It is a pasture for gazelles, an abbey for monks, a table for the Torah, Kaaba for the pilgrim. My religion is love. Whichever the route love's caravan shall take, that shall be my path of faith. So let's sit together for just a moment, kind of let the words sink in. Thinking of how we can go beyond the instinctive and habitual to join this caravan of love. So thank you all so much for being here today and for listening. And now we have time for some small group discussion. So I will split you up into the breakout groups of, you know, probably 3 or 4 people, depending on how many are here. So I'll go ahead and do these groups. And what I'd like you to do for your discussion once you get into your groups is just to consider ways in which Vedanas might be influencing your relationships or ways in which you recognize how they have influenced them, and share what you would like to share about that. It might be in your reaction to people you meet randomly, people you choose as friends versus those you may not make efforts to know, assumptions and prejudices that come up, expectations of pleasant or unpleasant interactions you have in your ongoing relationships. Whatever comes up for you that you feel comfortable for sharing around this topic is fair game. So I'll put you in your groups and we'll have like maybe say 15 minutes or so for discussion and then we can come back together. Okay, it looks like people are pretty much returned. So this is an opportunity for you to share anything you would like to share in your discussion groups for questions, comments. To let me know that you have a question or a comment, you can use your little, raise your little, that little hand that's associated with the reactions, I guess. or you can also just kind of unmute yourself and wave your hand. So, questions or comments from anybody? Oh, yes. Janelle, go ahead.
I just wanted to say thank you for that Dharma talk. It was really great.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you.
I felt inspired by Martine Batchelor. That was such a fantastic talk she gave that it really excited us about this topic, this way of looking at relationships. So thanks. I'm glad it was helpful.
Thank you.
Yes, I'd like to echo what Janelle said. Thank you for the Dharma talk and also for the meditation. It sort of reinvigorated my need to be steeped in the four foundations of mindfulness. And I would say one of the things that came up for me in our group discussion were actually the two things. One is the notion that, you know, life is suffering, obvious, isn't it? Life is suffering. We all suffer. And that's an impermanence. It's a wave. And riding that wave is probably the way out. And also the recognition that it's a privilege to be on the path of the Dharma, because it's like being a kid in a science experiment shop. You play with a thing and it works, like, my goodness, this works. So what's next? Let me try this, and on and on and on and on. So thank you.
Thank you for that comment. Yeah, we are privileged to be on this path and to have tools that can help us maybe recognize the way that we are causing ourselves suffering and others suffering.
Lyndall, can I share something?
Sure.
When I love the pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And in a relationship, one of the things I shared is that there will be in another person things that are really pleasant, things that are really unpleasant, and things that are neutral. And that looking at how I focus too much on one. So like I have this very dear friend who's also a difficult person. And it would be easy for me to focus on what's annoying instead of all of her generosity and smart and supportive and funny and, you know, the whole list of all the things that I love about her. Instead, you know, that focusing too much on the unpleasant Vedana, and to see that they change and they come and go, and that it's my responsibility that I respond, that I have to own that my response has been negative. It's, you know, it, she may or may not be doing anything that's negative. It's just, you know, so thank you for bringing all of that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that, Susan. That is, I think that's a really one important point, is that fact that pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral in all of us. So it's not just one reaction to a person. I mean, one may be predominant, but especially the more you know them, the whole gamut is there. And yeah, it is our responsibility to be aware. Yeah, so thank you. You really expressed it beautifully in terms of our relationships with others and taking in that whole range. And being with that whole range in ways that are kind instead of in ways that are destructive. Yeah, thank you.